Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, it is my privilege to have a very accomplished individual, Sirisha Bhamidipati from Pune, who's going to be chatting with me. Sirisha, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me over.
Sirisha is from IIM Ahmedabad. She's a Fulbright scholar. She works with leaders to build company culture, and she's a coach and mentor. And in her own words, she's building a practice in culture. So, Sirisha, before we get into work, you had an amazing childhood. Tell me about what motivated you to fight your illness and excel.
Yeah. So that's a question that's actually close to my heart because that's what shaped me to be the person that I am today. Yeah. And so when I was 13, I was always interested in sports and like playing and was good at academics. When I was 13 years old, I had some strange illness, and within 24 hours, my entire body was paralyzed.
Oh God.
So everything below my neck, I could just move my eyes and look around. I was mentally awake, but everything else was paralyzed. And that was very strange. The doctors couldn't find out what it was. And multiple reports, something suggested malaria, something else, another report suggested typhoid, and a variety of things. I was just being pumped with medicines and basically kept alive. You know, I was in a vegetative state, but just kept alive for 2 months. I was in the ICU. And then, end of 2 months, they also expected that I might have a brain damage or a lung infection or something like that. At the end of 2 months, I was still the same. And first, the doctors came and told my parents, okay, good news and bad news. Good news, she's alive. Because my parents were already told that there's very little chance of she staying alive. And the bad news is she's going to be in the state that she's in because she's just not responding to any type of movement or she's not responding to anything. And so when we came home, we didn't have any other choice. And my father refused to buy me a wheelchair. He said, we're going to fight it out. He himself was a sports person. He said, we're going to fight it out and we'll figure out why you can't move. You know, and enormous support from my mom, from my brother. And we said, okay, let's figure it out. And I love going to school. I never miss school for any reason. So I said, I want to go back to school. I was in my eighth grade then. So my father said, okay, let's do it. And he refused to buy me a wheelchair, but actually carried me everywhere, you know, in his arms. And that wasn't easy because of all the medicines that were pumped into me, I became close to 104 kilos. But he actually picked me up, put me in my class. I used to sit, my friends and teachers helped me learn, study. And it took me a year to actually start writing with my hands. And my dad used to make me exercise for almost 8 hours a day. So the deal was I work out and only then I get to go to school. So 8 hours and I'm back on my feet. I walk, I move around, everything. Yes. So he's the one who actually defied all odds to make me get to where I am. What fascinates me when I look back at that journey is enormous support, right? It's your environment probably. It's less of you, more about your environment than actually brings out who you are as a person. Like, so maximizing your potential happens a lot because of your environment and not just because of your willpower. That is needed, but that's only required to a certain extent.
Incredible.
And I always wanted to be a doctor from, you know, when I was in my fourth standard. In fact, I have my book where I used to sign off as Dr. Sirisha, FRCS, London. I always wanted to be a doctor and a neurosurgeon to be specific. Okay. And so I got back, recovered. I still had some flaccidity, but I got to a decent stage where I could manage things myself. Went ahead, wrote my medical entrance. I got through the admission. And I was just about started college when I was denied admission on medical grounds. They said, you're not 100% physically fit. You cannot become a good doctor. They were right, probably, but the kid that I was, it was very tough for me to accept it. And then it was like my world came crashing in front of me, right? So that's when, again, a lot of support, explored alternate options, did my bachelor's in computer science, then did my BA from IIM Ahmedabad. That was, again, an incredible change journey for me. Again, getting into work as a professional, if I wanted to be in the management field and started off as a consulting, had airtime with CEOs, was moving across, traveling, all of that. And what interested me was my passion in people. I was managing a P&L, managing close to about 700 people, which was an enormous learning experience for me. But my passion for people actually made me say, you know what, this is where my purpose lies, and I want to move into consulting with people. So I think the journey has been incredible, and probably I wouldn't trade this off with anything else, even if I have to redo it again.
I mean, I'm hoping that someday I will be able to read a book about your incredible journey. So let's move on, you know, let's talk about what you're passionate about, which is, you know, values and culture. How do you define values and culture?
So, culture is actually become a very loosely used word, right? Or something that is restricted to boardroom discussions and a clerk in the office. But culture is actually the values that a company stands for. You know, what do they want to stand for? So the way I look at culture is you define the purpose of the organization, the reason for your existence, which is not your near-term profit or the kind of investors you're going to have on board, but it's actually about who you want to be. And to get to that desired purpose, there's some identity that you want along the way, right? That I want to be known for being like this. And we define that for human beings, right? You have your desired, you have your purpose, you have your desired identity that you want to be known for, which is typically like the Heath brothers say, writing your own obituary.
Right.
How do you want to people to remember you? It's the same thing for organizations. Culture is so sacrosanct to a company, which actually says, what do you stand for? What is the identity that we have in the market? So it's not you know, just about having a football table or having employee get-togethers, which is what it is trivialized to today when it comes to actually building culture in companies. Values are something that, so I typically say culture is to recruiting as what product is to marketing. You know, it's so important because your culture is what attracts you the right set of people, and it not only attracts the right set of people, but it helps you maximize their potential, get them to do the best that they can be. Values are those that you can never trade off in a company. So for instance, those are core ethos of the company, right? Where you say that, you know, these are things that we will recognize and these are things that we will not compromise about. So for instance, if the company has honesty as one of its values, then you should be open to brutal feedback. You should be open to, you should build a culture where anybody in the organization can come and give some suggestions to anybody. And you should be okay with people standing up when somebody is doing something wrong or saying something wrong or if they disagree. That's what is honesty as a value.
Nice.
Unfortunately, what happens is these values have to translate to behavior, but in most companies, that really doesn't happen. They just left it, defining them at a very high level, which boils down to, okay, what do I make out of it? So it is left open to interpretation, right? And that's where you end up doing the way you want to do it, rather than the way the company or the management ideally envisioned it to be done.
Well said. So let's continue talking a little bit about culture. You know, when you talk of these large established 100-year-old companies, there are certain norms that have been established which really form and define the culture of the company. But given all the work that you are doing, how does a startup start to define its culture?
So for a startup, I think it's the other way around that I feel, that for a startup, it's easy and it's good to do. It's actually good to do when you're about, you know, when you're the owner founder minus two levels. The moment you get there, that's when you'll have to actually concretely define what culture is. You know, define the kind of culture that you want in your company, define the kind of value. And unfortunately, culture is something that falls in the important but not urgent space, right? Because it's not, there's no short-term quick return. It is not tangible.
Right.
But then what is very important is you like it or you don't like it, the culture of the company gets formed.
Right.
You might as well handhold that journey and take people along that process to define it the way you want your company to be.
Right.
And for a startup, it's actually reasonably easy, according to me. Whereas for bigger companies, right, or companies that are already established, when I do culture transformation work, it's like doing a triple bypass when the person is alive. You know, it's critical. it's important to do it, but it's also very risky, because you might have people leaving, you might have a lot of dissonance created in the organization, which eventually you look back at it 5 years later, you see that that attrition that happened was always good attrition. But at that point, hampers your business quite a bit.
So, Sirisha, you know, without giving names, can you give me an example of where you went in and were faced with a challenging culture?
Oh, yeah. One fascinating client, fascinating product, great core leadership team. But there was a lot of dissonance in the way the leaders work. So, let's say there was a CEO, there was a CTO, there was a CFO, there was a COO. Each worked, had their own style. Okay, all of these people are best minds from different organizations, but they were not aligned on the overall purpose of the organization. Okay. Each had a different view of how to get there. Because of that, and one person among all of these CFOs had a completely different view, was not totally aligned to the purpose. So when I went in, he and his team, he was very protective about his team. He and his team had a different way of operating in the organization. Vis-a-vis the rest of the organization. It was close to about 120 people organization. So then it becomes so challenging and difficult, because any decision was always considered you versus me. There was unnecessary conflict. There was unnecessary, you know, protection of their own people, their own territory, right? So that was happening. That's when I went in. And we had a lot of, so I'm also an executive coach, right? So I tried coaching, got all of them to do some workshops, to actually get to their purpose. We did what is called, you know, something like band grid analysis, which is, you know, 5 years later, 10 years later, if you were to actually see, write your own newspaper headlines about your company, what would you write them as?
Correct.
To get them to understand the purpose. And we clearly saw that there was a misalignment. Then we said, okay, there is a misalignment. We actually spelt it out. And then we got around the coaching to actually understand what is needed. And then we put in certain practices for the company based on what is required for the company, for the company's purpose, their desired identity and the values. Then what it ended up being was this leader and a few people from the leader's team, who are all pretty senior, 15, 20 years of experience, were standing out. They were not gelling well with the culture. We actually coached them around to understand what does it mean, what does it translate to behaviors in the organization. For example, if I can take one example of a behavior, right? They were not open to feedback. The group was extremely talented, but they assumed that they knew it all. For instance, you don't have, you're not listening to what the sales guy is telling you about what customers are saying. And you're in your own shell building the best-in-class product, right? But they were not open to feedback. They were always taking feedback as something that's being said against them rather than, you know, something aligned to the overall purpose. And so we actually took them. There were a few people who ended up leaving at the end of the day. But today they are one of the best startups in India, close to becoming a unicorn. Have got their CDC funding and are doing fantastically well. But what we did then, it made us lose a few people initially. And set us back in terms of our own plan. But that made us also get the right kind of people into the organization. And what I always tell leaders is people are not, you know, individuals are not bad. When you go and recruit, a lot of companies, the mistake that they do is they recruit the best person in the market. While high performance is important, it's also alignment to the purpose and your organization that is also extremely important.
Yeah.
It's the culture, the fitment into the culture that actually matters or differentiates how the person performs. And that's something that that's very difficult for a CEO to accept at a point where, you know, investors are sitting on their head and the board meetings are there every month where they have to report on their progress and they're actually going back because people are leaving.
Very interesting.
So that's the challenge
there. Very interesting. So let's move to the next part of our conversation, which is your role as a coach. I've been noticing that in the last few years, coaching is becoming very, very relevant in our country. Traditionally, Indians have been coached either by a senior boss or by an elder in the family. What is changing in our country now that people are willing to pay for coaching?
So, a coach, typically, as a coach, what I offer is a safe space for people to open. And the individual actually directs the conversation. And I only facilitate the process of that person doing some introspection. There is some amount of discomfort when you actually realize there are some things that are not working right. And I help them through that process. And coaching is not where somebody is actually, I don't give any advice. Mm-hmm. I only patiently listen. I help them reflect. I don't go back into their past, but it is all conversations that are close to future. But as part of reflection, they bring out some things that have influenced them in the past. Mm-hmm. And if they want to change that, overcome that narrative, overcome that inhibition to change their own narrative, mm-hmm. that is when I, you know, help them meander or go through that process. That's what coaching is. Mentoring was very common in India, which is where usually it's the boss. And it's very specific career-oriented conversations. Over a period of time, you become very comfortable to share personal things with the mentor and, you know, get advice and guidance. But it's always about somebody at a position of authority or, you know, somebody with more experience, somebody with, you know, very facets to that whole personality who offers you advice, where you look for advice. In coaching, it's not just about advice, but it's more about identifying the purpose. Most of the coaching that I focus on is actually helping people identify their purpose and identify what they're passionate about. And usually the kind of people that, two such categories of people that come to me are, one, people who are going through career transition. Since I myself have gone through a variety of career transitions, I understand what they're talking, so probably I'm a better listener there with a lot more empathy. And that's where it actually helps them solve their own problems by looking at what is important for them. So that's where I think that dissatisfaction at the workplace, which, you know, like a latest BCG report said, 85% of employees are disengaged at their workplace. And disengagement is probably what makes people sit back and look at their own lives from a third person's point of view.
Interesting. So as a person who coaches so many people, my question is that who, in your opinion, should be looking for a coach?
If you ask me, everybody.
Everybody?
So in fact, I work with two coaches. Mm-hmm. So two very different things, but with each of them, I'm comfortable talking about a few things. Mm-hmm. I have two coaches myself. Mm-hmm. And at different points in life, I think coaches help you because it's just about zooming out and looking at things. Like somebody just helps you zoom out. If you know, one is very high on self-awareness and can actually periodically reflect, zoom out and look at things. Most of this part, they do it by themselves. Sometimes somebody just asks you some open questions. A coach just asks you those open questions, which helps you reflect. And a coach acts as a nudge for you to move forward, keeps asking you those questions at a periodic, in a periodic manner, and gets you to reflect a lot more. So that's where it helps. So I think there's no who needs a coach is not there. Any person who wants to grow, who wants to actually get better than what they are today, a coach is always helpful.
Very nice. And therefore, a follow-up question to that is that if I am your coachee, how do I evaluate my coach?
One of the first things I always tell people is what I call coaching chemistry. You know, whether you're comfortable opening up with me. The first conversation is whether you find a safe space where I'm listening to you completely, completely involved in that conversation. And you're comfortable opening up. So for me, that probably is the most critical thing, because with a coach, there's a confidentiality agreement when somebody signs up as a coach, right? Where, you know, you don't reveal that to anybody else. But it's also important that you have that comfortable space where you can open up to the coach. I think if you evaluate that, any coach, a certified coach, goes through the process. If you're comfortable with the narrative, so usually what I do is I do two sessions completely free where we just go get started with the coaching process. Mm-hmm. End of it, the comfort is established, we continue, and then if it doesn't, then I also encourage them to actually go ahead and talk to other coaches.
Very nice. So let me ask you a few questions personally. I mean, I've got time for three, four questions for you personally.
Sure.
My first question is that, where do you draw your inspiration from? I mean, you've had such an amazing life.
My inspiration early on was from people around me. I'm a dreamer, so I always have a lot of dreams. So even now, I keep writing down about what do I want to do 5 years, 10 years later, then how do I go on my journey? So I have my over a period of time, I think I've got my purpose in life very clear. Probably all the ups and downs that I've gone through in life made me reflect quite often. So I have my purpose clear. And that purpose, the dream of fulfilling that, which is less for me, more for the society that I live in, is where my inspiration comes from.
My next question is that, how do you set your own personal goals?
So I have this habit of writing destination postcards inspired by what Heath Brothers talk in their book. And I keep writing my destination postcards, which is, destination postcard is essentially where you say, you're writing a postcard from the place, end place that you want to be and how you feel at that point in time. Right. So I write my destination postcards, that's my true north. Mm-hmm. To reach there, there are a lot of intermediate milestones that I cross, which effectively translate into my goals.
Okay, well said. My next question is that if you, Sirisha, were a role model to millions of children who closely followed you and your life choices, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
Okay, one thing I would change in myself definitely is my networking. My process of networking, and when I say networking, it's not like X number of followers or anything like that, X number of connections or LinkedIn or things like that, but actually making those meaningful personal connections. I'm an introvert by nature, and so I'm very comfortable with books, my world, and talking to people where there's a clear thing of what are we talking about. But what I realized of late is, for the last 4 or 5 years, when I've actually been stepping out to talk to people without actually having an objective, then I realized there's so much that one can learn from people around. And they're different, it exposes me to different perspectives. And it also makes me more open to hearing different points of view. And if I were to change something, probably I would do this networking much earlier, from a much younger age.
Terrific. So you mean what you're saying is that networking is important for everybody, and they should start as early as possible.
Yeah. And meaningful networking. Yeah. It's not just about exchanging cards or something like that, but actually understanding other people and drawing some inspiration from them, inspiring them, all of that. So getting into those conversations without having any objective.
Very well said. Okay. So I have time for two more questions for you. My next question is, what does success mean to you?
I don't actually set success benchmarks and milestones that I have to meet when I celebrate. Okay. For me, every day, if I've lived true to my purpose, so my philosophy for myself is being the best that I can be every single day. Mm-hmm. So given the context of that particular day, if I've done what I want to do and in the best possible way, it's been a successful day. So me being too close to or true to myself is what a success.
Well said. And my last question to you, and I come back to the pandemic, which the whole world is facing. How are you rethinking your life in the new world order?
So what the pandemic has done for me actually is a lot more time with people, a lot more space for reflection, and you're stuck to the confines of your room, right? So you're getting forced to get into introspection mode at times, and a lot more time with family and people who matter, people who are close to me, getting to understand them better, because it's like, you know, 4 or 5 people in the house living together all the time. Right. So earlier work was like used to take a significant part, which is outside of time at home. And it exposed me to enormous people across the world. So that's like the biggest positive for me, where I get to speak to people across the globe now. Earlier, it was probably my own mental barrier to actually reach out to people outside. I always thought, you know, somebody within India, somebody where who I can eventually go in at a short notice and go and meet are people who I should connect to. So right now I'm talking to a professor at INSEAD. I'm talking to one of my ex-colleagues that I worked with who's in the US. So conversations have become easy, simpler, and, you know, the whole world is your marketplace is how it's become now. It's amazing. So that, to me, it's actually broken a lot of barriers, mental barriers that I have. It becomes made me probably a lot more patient and empathetic, being with people, very understanding people better. is what it has resulted in. And also, I see that people put a lot of extra effort when you're communicating virtually, which you wouldn't when you're meeting physically, right? So even if the conversations are shorter, they're a lot productive and they're a lot warm.
Correct. I agree with you. Sirisha, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I wish you lots of success and I sincerely hope I get to see a book from you.
Thank you so much, Ashish. The book is on the way.
It's on the way.
In the making. And yeah, I completely enjoyed talking to you. It was like coming straight from the heart. So thank you so much for
that. Thank you again. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.